This is the Bible Show. Welcome to the Bible Show. My name is Sam Kasten Smith. I'll be your host today. Joining me is Will Bushman.
Hello, Sam.
And we are continuing our series in the miracles of Jesus. And today we're going to be in Mark chapter 5, starting in verse 21. And it's kind of a fusion of two miracles, but they're important to be told together. The Gospels tell them together. We're going to tell them together. And one of them is one of the resurrection miracles, where Jesus is going to raise Jairus' daughter from the dead. He's a synagogue ruler. We'll talk more about that. But he also heals a bleeding woman. That's the way that she is referred to in church tradition and in the scriptures, who had been bleeding for 12 years, which was a terrible thing to have to go through, particularly in first century Israel. And we'll talk more about that. But there's so much richness in these stories, into the character of Jesus, into the nature of faith and miracles. And so this is one of the more beautiful miracles. So let's dive right in. You got anything you want to go into that?
Yeah, and this just takes place. We've already talked about the demoniac healing in Mark 5, and then Mark 6 is the feeding the 5,000. So this is kind of in between. We kind of went out of order, it seems, but it's fascinating how quickly Mark gets to all this stuff. It just seems like, it seems like the greatest hits of Jesus' ministry a little bit, because it all feels very shortened and like bang, bang, one after the other. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is kind of the greatest hits of his miracles that are thrown together right here in Mark. And this is happening, like the first verse it says, and when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, well, what he's talking about is he's leaving the Decapolis. That's the place where, you know, he'd cast the demon into the pigs and they'd run off into the Sea of Galilee. And he heals this demoniac who would have been a Gentile living in a Gentile territory. And now he's come back over. And that actually is a good way to set us up, because one of the things that you learn in that demoniac miracle is there's a sense of imputation in all of Jesus's miracles. And so what do I mean by imputation? Like, when Jesus heals you, it's like he's giving you an essence of himself. It's not just, he's not just looking up into the universe and saying, health, go to him. It's like he is health, and he's imputing his health, his life. He's the source of all of it to you. And then there's also the nasty part gets imputed to him, because what is it that makes Jesus able to look at anyone and to say, okay, you're righteous, and in that righteousness, you're now healed? Well, for them to be righteous, they not only have to receive his righteousness, but he has to take away their
unrighteousness,
their sin. And so when you're in the miracle of the demoniac, you see a very, it's a very obvious imputation.
It's clear.
Like, he is saying, okay, the evil that is totally infested this poor guy, a legion of demons, he's going to take out of this guy, and he's going to impute all of those demonic forces into the pigs, and then they fly off and they go down into the lake. And in that story, you know, and this is a little bit of a stretch, but you see this in all of his miracles. Like, when Jesus comes to this guy, we find out that he's naked, that he's all cut up, that he's abused, that he's ashamed, he's outside the city, he's infested with evil that's not of his own. Like, it's not his evil. It's in, like, this beings of evil. When Jesus goes to the cross, there's a lot of this miracle that it's like you see. He says, okay, I'm going to endure that for you. Because when he goes to the cross, what do you find?
He's naked. He's abused.
He's naked. He's abused. He's bloody. He has this evil that's outside of him that is now imputed to him. And what happens to him? Instead of it being cast out into pigs and dealt with, no, he's the one who's going to be plunged down into the sea, which is the emblem of death and judgment, like we talked about. So it's like in every miracle that Jesus does to bring life and flourishing to other people, he's ultimately at the cross going to be able to experience this as well, which is pretty phenomenal. Like, when he's going through the passion, they blindfold him. Well, he heals a lot of blind people. In that moment, he's going to take on blindness. He's going, like, there's so many things like that where he will have that done to him. Like it, the cleansing of the temple, when he takes out the whips and he's doing that to cleanse the temple. Well, you're the temple, mm-hmm. and he's coming to cleanse you. And how does that happen? He's going to be whipped. The true temple of God in the flesh is going to be whipped and purged so that you can become the clean temple. And there's so many things like that. And in this story, we also find miracles of imputation, most specifically with this woman who's bleeding, as we'll see. But it's important to understand that concept of imputation as we're going into it.
And that's really helpful because a lot of times we think, oh, it just gets overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
Or the sin just gets overlooked. No, somebody pays for it. It's like, I mean, I guess the same idea of there's no free lunch. Like, somebody's paying for something.
That's right.
And it's Jesus in all of these. That's forgiveness. Taking the stuff that you don't want and giving you what you do.
Yeah, forgiveness is not free. Mm-hmm. Healing is not free. He pays for it all, which is pretty remarkable. So we're starting in Mark chapter 5, verse 21. It says, when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, so he's going from the Gentile side of the Sea of Galilee back over to the Jewish side. He's going to Capernaum. Matthew tells us that. He goes back to his own city. So he's coming into Capernaum. It says, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was beside the sea. So as soon as he gets to the shoreline, it's like, boom, there's a crowd again. And it's like, just enter into that. Like, how exhausting this must have been. Like, there's nowhere you go. Once his ministry's public and he's known for doing miracles, everywhere he goes, somebody's waiting for him.
And that's his home base. So they're always just like, oh, he's got to come back sometime.
Yeah, right.
They're always waiting, just waiting for him.
Yeah. It says, then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. And so Jesus went with him. And there's a number of things that are going on here that if you're following the story, that add to the drama of this moment, right? Mm-hmm. So from the chronology that you find in the other Gospels, we know that there's already been a moment in the city of Capernaum where some other major authoritative figure comes forward and says, hey, I've got someone who's really sick, nearing the point of death. I need Jesus to heal this person. And that's the centurion. But the centurion does something that's altogether different. When he comes to Jesus, he says, hey, my servant is sick. He's nearing death. I need you
just to speak.
To speak, right? Like, I'm a man under authority. I know that when I speak, people do things. Well, I recognize that all of creation is under your authority, so you just need to speak and my servant will be made well. And Jesus is like, oh my goodness, there's not such faith like this in all of Israel. Like, your faith is amazing. You believe, you understand that I can just speak and things happen. And so Jesus marvels at that. And so here, that's a centurion, a Roman centurion, non-Jew, and so he's already had this example, and yet here comes Jairus, who is the ruler of the synagogue, which, if, to understand what that means, like, it's a mixture of a couple of things. It would be like, you know, the local pastor. He's the one who's scheduling the services. He's bringing in the speakers, the teachers. He's kind of running the synagogue. But in a first century Jewish town, this guy's like the mayor. It's a position of authority. So it's not just, you know, today we have everything so bifurcated that a pastor, you don't even think of him being like involved in government or influencing policy or anything like that. But the ruler of a synagogue was like considered like the chief elder of the town. He was a voice that everybody wanted to listen to, and he would have had some authority. So he comes to Jesus, and it's like the mayor, you know, the mayor of the town is coming to Jesus, and he's saying, come with me. So he hadn't learned from this centurion, like, to just speak a word. If he had seen that or heard that, Jesus had healed a man in this synagogue on the Sabbath, and it caused
a ruckus, to say the least,
uproar, where they were like, it is wrong to do that on the Sabbath. You know, the Sabbath, you're not allowed to do anything, and da-da-da-da-da. And actually, in that point of the story, it says that the Jews were so upset about that that that's when they began to plot to kill him.
Jesus, yeah.
And this is up in Galilee. Like, these aren't the heavy hitters that you're going to find down in Judea, but already they're like, this guy needs to go. And so it's the ruler of this synagogue that now is going, knowing that members of his congregation, members of the town, are beginning to be like, this guy's got to go. Now Jairus, who's the ruler of this synagogue, has a crisis, right? My daughter is on the verge of death. It's going to be really, really politically unpopular.
Yeah.
If I now go to Jesus after that last ruckus and I say, I need you. Because everybody else is saying this guy's a heretic, he's a blasphemer, he's out of the law of God, this is not the Messiah. For Jairus to go to him and be like, hey, I need you to heal my dying daughter, is very clearly putting both feet in Camp Jesus. And risky for him politically, but his daughter's dying. And at this point,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Sell it all for it.
That's right. And he knows, he has seen Jesus do the incredible, the remarkable. And when all the chips are on the table, he's willing to walk away from his political capital and credibility and everything else and to go to Jesus.
And the crazy part outside of that, that's all really great. The crazy part, whenever the synagogue comes up in Capernaum, they still have the floor from where Jesus walked there now, which I just think that's a fascinating place to go, because that's one of the, like when you're in the Holy Land, you can be like, Jesus probably walked here. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have been around here. But to say like, no, we've uncovered the actual stone floor that Jesus' sandals walked on. Just a really reassuring and kind of blows your mind when you're there. Because you're like, wait, I'm allowed to walk on it, right? And they're like, yeah. And so that's just a fun fact that I think, man, if you have that experience, to take it. Because Capernaum, of all places, really makes these stories come alive.
Yeah, because you really do see the ruins. I mean, you see the synagogue that was built upon the old synagogue. You walk the paths that Jesus would have walked. And one of the things I love about Israel, if you ever do have a chance to go there, all around the Sea of Galilee is among my favorite, because as much as it draws tourism and as much as they could build the hotels and everything else, like, they really go out of their way to keep that area pristine as it would have been, to where it's not, you know, overwhelmed with the touristy things that kind of take the authenticity away. You're literally in Capernaum, and it's just the ruins. And you've got to drive there. You can't. Your hotel's not across the street or anything, because they want to keep it as it was, which I really appreciate.
Good job, yeah.
Galilee is, I think, top three of my favorite places to go, and Capernaum at the top of that.
Yeah,
for sure. So that's what's going on here. My little daughter's at the point of death. Come lay your hands on her, so that she may be well and live. And so Jesus goes with him. He doesn't say, hey, why didn't you be like the centurion who just...
He's gracious.
So a great crowd followed him and thronged all about him. Now that's important, right? He's walking in a crowd and everybody wants him.
Yeah.
So the crowd is pressing in. And you got to imagine, if Jesus was claustrophobic, it would have been miserable,
right? Bad line
right?
of business, yeah.
Because everybody's coming. Everybody's trying to get close. So they're pushing these people who are pushing these people who are pushing these people. And it's like they're just moving through this throng of people. You're not keeping track of who's touching you, because it's everybody's touching you at some point or another. Verse 25, it says, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. Now, what does that mean? That means, in all likelihood, she's struggling with menstruation, and she has not been able to stop bleeding. Like, she is persistently having, essentially, her period.
Yes.
And this is going on for 12 years. And that, you know, that's bad enough if you imagine it in our modern-day context.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a really hard thing to walk through. Magnify that by many orders of magnitude if you're in first-century Israel, because the law... The Levitical law about cleanliness and everything else said that when you were in your period, because bloodborne pathogens and everything else and things being unclean, you were to separate yourself for the entirety of your menstruation. Mm. And so, like, for 7 days or so, you were pulled out of community. You weren't allowed to go to synagogue. You weren't allowed to go to the market. You were to stay home during that time so that there was no risk of uncleanness spreading out, right?
Of the whole idea of imputation.
Yeah, that's right. Then because
that her unclean blood would make you unclean.
Yeah,
and there's some contact with
in
her.
The fallen world, like, can you think of good imputations? In the fallen world, like, you can catch my cold, but you can't catch my health.
yeah, you can physically. Yeah,
you can catch my COVID, but you can't catch my health, like, fitness. Yeah, thankfully, you can't catch my fitness.
Yeah,
but. Like, in the fallen world, you only catch the negative. Mm. You know, I guess emotionally, you might, you know, my joy or something like might rub off.
Like,
or
mentally,
laughter.
Maybe that helps. But physically, I can't think of any.
In a broken world, imputation only works negatively, right? With Jesus, that gets turned upside down, as we'll see. So she's been bleeding for 12 years, which means she's been perpetually declared unclean. If this has been going on since she's gone through puberty, that means that she has never had a husband.
Yes.
Because obviously she's infertile. You can't conceive and bear a child if you're constantly going through this, which means no one would take her as a wife. And if she was married, she's divorced.
Yeah.
She's been abandoned. Add to that, for 12 years, no children, no husband, no community, because she's got to keep herself isolated all this time by law. And so this is a lady who has had no human contact legally for 12 years. She's given up the hopes, the little girl hopes of being a mom or a wife, gone. So it's far more than the physical impacts of what this has taken from her. The emotional, the spiritual, the familial, like, you can't go to your parents. You can't do anything.
And wouldn't this borrow from the synagogue as well and religious activities?
Yeah, there's no worship.
Whatnot.
There's no community. You're not going to temple. Mm. Like, you cannot be around other people. And you've got to imagine, like, what she's going to everybody, every doctor, you know, we're going to see in a minute. So you can bet that what else has she done? She's been crying out to God for 12 years. Now, that it's easy to say 12 years. But to imagine daily crying out, I have no children, and, you know, every year that ticks by is one less year of possibility that I'm ever going to have children, one less year of I'm ever going to have a husband. And you know this woman has been crying out to God and heartbroken every time she does. And so this discharge of blood taken 12 years, and it says she had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse.
Yes.
And I was reading a thing that came out of the Talmud, what the ancient rabbis used to do. Okay. Like, and this was in one of the commentaries that I was reading, and it was like, these people are like kooks. So this is, I'm just going to read this quote from this document. It says, Rabbi Jochanan says, take of gum Alexandria and of alum and of corcus hortensis the weight of azuzi each, and let them be bruised together and given in wine to the woman that hath the issue of blood. But if this fails, take of Persian onions 9 logs, boil them in wine and give it to her to drink and say, arise from thy flux. But if this should fail, set her in a place where 2 ways meet. Let her hold a cup of wine in her hand and let somebody come behind her and scare her and say, arise from thy flux. But if this should fail, and it just keeps going on and on.
I don't know what I was expecting, but that sounded more like a Harry Potter potions
class.
Doesn't
it?
Than what I was ready
like,
for.
So these doctors are total kooks.
Persian onions. How could you track those down?
All right. But so everything, she's laying out all of her money for this kind of stuff. I mean, and nothing is there. And by the way, the healers a lot of times were the rabbis. Mm. So these are the men of God that have failed her. So everything about this just gets more and more devastating when you realize what she's walked through, what she's carrying, how the church has disappointed her, how family has disowned her, how the husband has either left her or no
Never
one's coming.
Come.
Like, she's totally alone in all of this. And she's poured herself out chasing everything else, and nothing's worked. And it might not be a physical ailment, but we can relate to that, right? Like, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me that has caused me shame, that's cut me off from community, that's done all of these things, and I've looked for healing, I've looked for solutions everywhere. And you can fill in the blank, like, where do you find your identity? Where do you go for healing? You know, I try to perform, and I try to climb the ladder, and I do my bank account, or whatever it might be, like, there's a million ways that you can jump into this lady's story, and it's not the same level of suffering, and it's not the same story, but you have an ailment of the heart. You have this spiritual ailment that we all walk around with, and it's like, I need healing. I need to find something that can heal this, and we go to the kookiest things, right, that make no sense, the Persian onions, right? And we try to heal ourselves by going to in a million different directions. And one of the things that this story points out is all that stuff will just drain you.
Yeah, leaves you worse.
Yeah, it's going to make you suffer more. It's going to leave you empty. It's going to leave you bankrupt. There's one source of healing for this woman, who, and that's what?
Jesus.
There's one source of healing for you.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, we're all looking for imputation. We're going some places that can't give themselves because they don't have that ability.
That's right.
They're not infinite.
There's nothing that can heal the thing that you need to be healed. Mm. And Jesus alone is that. So, like, we enter into the story, we can relate to this woman on some level. And the scriptures are always inviting us to say, how can I relate to the person that's suffering, that's wicked, that needs forgiveness, the leper, the blind person? Like, there's ways that we can relate to all of them. And in her case, we can relate to that idea that we've looked for healing in a million places. None of them provide healing. They all leave us empty.
Yeah, this is one of those stories where you're like, man, I really want to relate to Jesus. And you come to scripture and you're like, man, can I just relate to Jesus once? And you're like, oh, man, it's never Jesus. It's always, yeah,
we're always
the bleeding woman, the blind guy, whatever it is, fill in the blank. Yeah, that's the one. That's me.
And that's right, though. But then you get to see how precious and how tender and wonderful he is, which is which is the best part. So she spent everything she had. She's no better. In fact, she's growing worse. So it's only getting worse. She heard the reports about Jesus. I mean, word's traveling all over the place that this guy's healing incredible conditions, raising people. And so she comes up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. So why is it that she touches his garment? We're told the fringe of his garment. So what she's talking about is every rabbi has a garment, but then at the bottom of it, they were commanded to have tassels that hung on the fringes of their garment. And this comes out of the book of Numbers, which is in the Torah, the fourth book of the Bible. And this is where God commands and says, speak to the sons of Israel. This is Numbers 15:38. Speak to the sons of Israel and tell them that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations. So Jesus is obedient. He's wearing this garment, right, with the tassels. And that they should put on the tassel of each corner a cord of blue, and it shall be a tassel for you to look at and to remember all of the commandments of the Lord, so as to do them and not follow after your own heart or your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all of my commandments and to be holy to your God. So what do the tassels represent?
God's commands.
God's commands. Holiness. Like, if there's something that's on the garment of the average Jewish man, every time they look down at the tassels, it's like, be obedient to the law of God. This is your holiness. This is a reminder that you're to be set apart. And so when this woman comes up and she goes to grab a specific part of his garment.
Yeah, she chooses that.
She chooses that. Why?
She's being obedient in the moment.
Yeah, but she recognizes what will set this man apart is in those tassels. Because every other person who wears those tassels does so at some level as a hypocrite. Yeah. You know, they're
the
wearing
hope is
the tassels
to remind you because you don't do it.
Correct.
That's what a reminder is.
That's correct. So they're all wearing the tassels and it's like, oh man, you know, like, didn't do this, I failed at this. I mean, they're sitting there kind of as a constant reminder that you don't measure up to the commands of God. You're breaking the commands of God. I need to do better. I need to do better. I need to do better. Jesus is the only one who can wear this robe with those tassels with absolute integrity.
Yeah.
I have kept the law of God perfectly. I have never sinned. And when she comes up and grabs hold of that, now we're talking imputation, all right? Because in the great imputation that will take place on the cross, what is it that gets imputed to you?
Righteousness of Jesus.
The righteousness of Jesus.
His holy.
Everything those tassels stand for, yours. Now you, in the eyes of God, are perfectly obedient. You are the perfect son or the perfect daughter of God, of God Almighty. And she goes hold and grabs hold of that. And I think for Jesus, he definitely knows what those are for. But that's what she grabs. And it says immediately, the flow of blood dried up.
Wow.
And she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Like, there's something that happens.
That's not power.
Like, right? Like, it again, and it's that immediate thing, just like the sea went calm immediately. There's no, like, lingering waves or whatever. Everything just goes glassy. In this case, she feels something. She's not waiting around to see, like, am I still bleeding? Like, she knows whatever it was that was dysfunctional in her body that was causing her to bleed, she feels her body heal itself in that moment and knows, my goodness, I've just been healed.
And that shows you how bad the ailment was.
Right.
Because, I mean, she was just feeling that constantly. It was such a noticeable thing to her that she's like, whoa, something has changed right now.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And Jesus feels it too. Now, that's kind of cool. You know, she immediately feels that she's being healed. But then it says, and Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him. And notice that. This is not, healing spirits out there, come do something that's outside of me and heal this woman. And then, you know, some external thing happens. No, power left him.
It's his power.
His power. It's his imputation of what he is and what he represents. It's life and healing and goodness that leaves him to make her well.
Huh.
So she feels the healing. He feels the depletion of whatever sense that is. You know, being infinite, he feels power leaving himself. And immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garment? Now, in that moment, because this is where, like, you jump into the, like, okay, he's fully God, he's fully man. He knows who touched him, I'm assuming, in this story. Like, he knows it's her. Why does he ask the questions? What do you think?
I think in the end, it's going to be the opportunity for her to speak. Like, yeah. To bring her to the center of attention.
And why would that have been terrifying?
Because she just broke a bunch of laws doing this.
Big time.
This defiled woman should not have been in a crowd. I mean,
correct.
Just, I can imagine, if the crowd's that big, she had to bump into a couple of people.
Oh, yeah.
At a minimum. So those people instantly unclean.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to a rabbi and you purposefully take your ailment and you touch him, mm-hmm, without him knowing. I mean, he knows, but in a normal sense. And yeah, all of a sudden you've just defiled. She can't defile Jesus, but
think about what that means. Like, she's going through the crowd. The perception is, every person she touches, imputation unclean, imputation unclean, imputation unclean. Like, everybody that she runs into, she's defiling, but she runs up against the Messiah and touches the tassel of his garment. And it's like, no, you don't make him unclean.
Yeah.
Now the imputation flows back. For the first, like, he has the power to impute good, unlike any other human being alive on planet Earth now or ever. And she is made well. But it would have been terrifying, because this whole crowd is like, wait a minute, she touched me, but, you know. Or, she made this holy man, like, I'm bringing my sick kid to be healed, and now you've made him unclean. You're stealing my miracle away.
Yeah.
Right? And so she is risking that. You've got Jairus over here, who's got a daughter that's near death. Like, are you risking? Because now he's unclean. If he's made unclean, he can't come into the ruler of the synagogue's house to heal his daughter. Like, this selfishness of this woman, whoever did this, like, you're putting a lot at jeopardy. And Jesus is like, who touched my garments? Which means, if she's pointed out, like, it, which makes you go, like, Jesus, like, don't do that. Like, you're putting her in danger. You're going to humiliate this woman. And yet there's a very beautiful reason why he's wanting her to come forward. And his disciples, he's like, who touched my garments? And it's just a melee of crowd mushing into each other. His disciple said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, yet you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he's like, so she's coming. She recognizes, like, it was me. She's trusting Jesus to be kind and merciful, to receive her, to not condemn her. Telling him the whole story. For 12 years, I've lost everything. And I touched you. I touched your garment. And I felt it. And you just imagine the tenderness of this moment. And you're waiting for the hammer to drop. The crowd is looking at this holy man, waiting for the hammer to drop. Like, is he going to say, you have violated such and such law?
And it's interesting I mean, we talk about this a lot, like Jesus is the goal, not means to the end. Mm-hmm. And she already had the healing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess she could have bailed. I don't know if she would have actually gotten away with it. But in a weird way, she's like, no, I want Jesus no matter what's going to happen now, even though I get yelled at.
And that's the beautiful part.
Yeah.
Jesus won't let her go, by the way, thinking that she just got a healing and the healing was the goal. He wants her to come to him.
Yeah.
Because he's the wellspring of healing. He's the wellspring of salvation. If she had been like, oh, cool, I got a healing, peace, you know, and leaves and go and live a normal life but never gets to know Jesus or to follow after Jesus, then, yeah, she might be healed of that, but she's got a greater sickness in her soul that eternally is not healed. But when she says, no, 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 it's not just this healing from this condition that I need, but I'm going to go before Jesus and I'm going to trust him with my life and I'm going to put myself in front of him and I'm going to share the whole truth and I'm going to testify about his goodness in front of this whole crowd, even though it might risk my life and jeopardy and well-being and everything else. And Jesus looks at her after that and says, daughter. Like, I mean, it's the only time that he ever calls anyone this.
Really?
Daughter. Like, he'll speak of crowds, the daughters of Jerusalem, but he looks at her and says, daughter.
Huh.
Like, no other person in his ministry gets this honor.
Wow.
Daughter, your faith has made you well. Now imagine somebody that's been cut off from community for 12 years, has forfeited everything, basically has no family, no community, and Jesus's first words after she identifies herself is, daughter. Like, that's just, like, how good is he? You know, there's no shame here. And in that moment, everybody in that crowd that's coming after Jesus to get something hears him say that. Now, all of a sudden, she's gone from the humiliated outcast to, like, the favorite of this popular rabbi that everybody's following around, and he exalts her by calling her daughter. Mm. That's going to follow her. She gets to leave there, and everyone's going, man, Jesus called her daughter. Like, don't mess with her. You know, she is special and set apart. But then listen to what he says. It wasn't you grabbing a tassel that made you well. Right?
Yeah.
Your faith has made you well. And that's the core of the Christian faith. It's not what you do. It's not all the steps you take. It's not going to church or putting yourself in situations where you might meet Jesus. It's the meeting of Jesus. It's the pursuit of Jesus. It's the faith to trust in Jesus that made her well. And so he says, go in peace. In other words, there's no consequence for you. Be at peace. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Unbelievable. Now, the other part of this story is he's on a mission to get it to Jairus' daughter, who's sick and dying. And on the way, what happens? There's an interruption.
Yeah.
This is like urgent of the minute, 911, like, please get here. My daughter's unresponsive. I need you to get here. And so Jesus is on the way to take care of Jairus' daughter. This woman stops him.
And Jesus just extends the time with her.
Yeah.
Jairus is probably freaking out by now.
Yeah. Jesus isn't like, hold on a minute, I got to get to Jairus' daughter. And now, but there's a number of things that are cool about this. Like, Jesus makes time for this woman, even in the midst of the emergency. And so, and again, you see the nature of Jesus. Like, who's Jairus?
He's the top dog.
He's like the mayor of Capernaum. He's the synagogue ruler. He's the top pastor. He's the elder statesman. If he says, hey, my daughter's dying, everyone should drop everything to jump for Jairus, right? That sounded really ridiculous.
Make t-shirts, jumping like for Jairus. Song.
Jump for Jairus. And you got, then you wail away. Anyway, what is that song?
I don't know.
Jumping, jiving, something like that.
Never heard of that one.
Oh, come on. Millennials. Anyway, but you should be chasing Jairus with the most urgency. And here comes this outcast that's been forgotten. You know,
I mean, literally worthless to everybody.
Worthless
not
to everybody.
Her. I'm not
in
saying
fact,
that.
Like, stay away. You have a negative balance.
Yeah, like, we need you outside of town.
Yeah, correct. And she comes to Jesus and he says, hold on, and gives her all the attention. And exalts her in the face of this. And one of the things that's interesting in the Gospels that come out, how old is Jairus' daughter? Do you know?
12.
She's 12. How long has this woman been bleeding?
12.
12 years.
Wow.
Both of them. And so here you have Jairus, who has the daughter. Like, everything is great for him. It's a daughter of joy and life, and he's the leader of the town, and this is the family that's the highest up and everything else. 12 years of blessing seem to be coming to an end for Jairus.
She's the opposite.
12 years of cursing for this woman. And Jesus meets her and says, I can rescue you out of your curse, right? And I'm going to spend time with you, and I'm going to exalt you, and I'm going to call you daughter, and I'm going to lift you up. And then for this, as we'll see, Jairus' daughter, 12 years of blessing is coming to an end. This moment that could have been catastrophic for this guy, that would trade everything he's ever had for the life of his daughter. And Jesus is going to intervene and say, I can raise her.
And it is catastrophic for a moment, at least.
For 100%. And we know that we know that a good bit of time has elapsed between this. So it says, while Jesus is still speaking, there came from the ruler's house someone who said, your daughter's dead.
Wow.
What is he thinking in that moment? Jesus, like,
why?
Why didn't you hurry?
Why'd you stop?
Why did you stop? Yeah.
For this woman.
Yeah, for this woman. Devastation. Your daughter is dead. And so they say, why trouble the teacher any further? In other words, like, there's no point now. She's dead. Like, let Jesus go. You know, he can go back to whatever he was doing before. Your daughter's dead. But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, don't fear, only believe. Like, again, you remember when we did the healing or the raising from the dead of the widow in Nain, where he, like, grabs the casket and says, stop crying? And you're like, dude, like, no, wrong, bad timing. You don't say that to somebody who's in that kind of grief. He's going to this guy who's just learned that his daughter's dead and says, don't be afraid. Just believe. Like,
I like how we don't see Jairus' reaction. Like, Jairus doesn't speak yet, which I think is fascinating.
It makes me wonder, like, how would his heart process that? Like, you know, this is a 12-year-old girl. I've got a 10-year-old girl. So immediately, like, I can't help but imagine, you know, if this happened to my Leah, my sweet, sweet, and Jesus came and said, hey, don't be afraid, only believe. Like, I know Jesus, so I think it would be different. But if I'm in Jairus' shoes, where it's like this new guy and there's rumors swirling and...
my group hates this guy.
Yeah, my group hates this guy. And he says, hey, don't be afraid, only believe. Like, would I believe if I was in Jairus' shoes? It'll be okay. Could I stop fearing and just be like, he's got this? That's a tall order. I
would hope, but I'm not sure.
Be able to not fear. I would believe. I would want to believe.
And I mean, so, you would have to believe at that point.
Yeah, there's
you've lost all your chips.
Option. I mean, but you just hope, like, oh, please let this guy not be a charlatan. And he allowed no one else to follow him except Peter, James, and John. That's the inner circle for Jesus.
And I guess Jesus is gracious to Jairus because he just watched this woman be healed. Mm-hmm. There is a moment where, like, hey, I literally have just proven my healing capabilities supernaturally in front of you. So I think that would help me when he says, you know, don't fear, only believe. Like,
yeah.
All right, at least I just laid eyes on something that I can, you know, compute.
But there's also something about, like, because one of the messages that comes out of this passage is the importance of faith for healing and salvation. Okay. So imagine Jesus. Okay, you've got a crowd that's all pressing in. Why are they pressing in on? What do they want?
Whatever they need.
Whatever they need. They're looking for miracles, right? They're all touching him. They're not healed.
Yeah, it's not like Jesus is just like oozing out power.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, we're bumping shoulders because I'm trying to get to you
and
because I touch you. Like, why did the woman who touched his garment get healed and none of the other people who are touching him get healed?
I mean, faith thing.
Yeah, that's it. She's grabbing hold of him by faith. So it's like being in the vicinity of Jesus isn't enough to get you saved. Going to church isn't enough to get you saved. Reading your Bible isn't enough to get you saved. Like, you have to come to him, grab hold of him, and believe. Faith is the operating principle. And so now your daughter's just died. You're watching. You see. I mean, you see the crowds. No one else is getting healed. This woman believed. And he says, your faith has rescued you. Go in peace. And now he says, hey, stop fearing. You believe.
Yeah, it's time for you to do it personally.
You believe. Like, because that's the only thing that you bring that has any power, because it tugs on the heartstrings of God and opens up the wellspring of his power into your life. Believe, Jairus.
Ooh.
Like, this is an intense moment. And so he takes the inner circle of his disciples. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. Now, what that means is, and this is kind of one of these stupid things in the first century Jewish culture that's like wild to me, there were prescriptions on getting paid mourners. Okay, so like somebody would come with a flute, and you'd have to get so many flute players, and you'd have to get so many professional mourners who knew how to wail properly and to make the scene. Like, everything was so scripted in terms of mourning. So by the time Jesus is getting there, that's what's going on. It's already ready. So
some time has passed.
Immediately, these people whose job that is, they're in place. All this is going on, and Jesus sees this, and he's like, oh, good grief. You know? And when he had entered, he said to them, hey, why are you making a commotion and weeping? This child is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. You know, they ridiculed him. Like, yeah, are you kidding? Like, the body's cold. The eyes are fixed in her skull. Like, she's gone. She's dead. But he pulled them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and he went into where the child was. And taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumi, which means, little girl, I say to you, rise. The word of resurrection right there, rise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. There it is. And they were immediately overcome with amazement, and he strictly charged them that no one should know this. Like, she's going to walk outside with all these mourners, like,
don't tell.
Yeah. And he told them to give her something to eat. In other words, this isn't a ghost. She's a physical body. Give her something to eat.
Oh, that makes sense. Again. I never understood that part.
Yeah. So in all of this, you've got him going in. Apparently Jairus believed. Come on in. Let's do this. Jesus speaks a word, Talitha kumi, and this girl rises from the dead. 12 years of blessing met by tragedy, and Jesus can save on the day of, and he can save after 12 years of begging and praying, and it's all on his timing. You know, he can pause to give his undivided attention to a woman who's a total outcast, and it doesn't rob Jairus of the miracle he needed as well. In fact, it only amplified what Jairus was looking for, and how the amazement of God and the goodness of God. You know, healing my daughter from a sickness is amazing. Thank you very much.
Cool.
Raising my daughter from the dead, you've got me. I'm yours forever, right? Whatever you want me to do, I'm yours. And I think Jesus knows that. Like, this ruler of the synagogue needed that more than he needed sickness to be healed. And this woman who's been walking through everything, having received the tenderness of Jesus, that's what she ultimately needed. It's what those townspeople needed. Like, and in the way that he does miracles, it's like he spreads the beauty of his gospel to everybody watching so that it has the greatest impact for eternity.
And a clear reminder for Jairus, like, yeah, your life has been blessed. Like, look at the blesser in the face. Like, it's me. Like, this would have been totally different if I wasn't here.
Yeah. We've got a friend that I've known shortly after coming to faith when we moved down to Fort Lauderdale. One of the families that I first got to know, they have a daughter who became pregnant, and I'm not going to give names, but the story is really beautiful.
Name names. No,
I'm not naming names.
Just kidding. I don't want names.
But she got pregnant. They had their first child, and the first child was born with pretty severe birth defects.
Okay.
Heart issues, and all of the medical professionals were saying, really enjoy this time. Your baby's going to die within days. So kind of heart-wrenching, you know, still in the hospital, cuddling, you know, spending every available time with a baby who, that's very clearly unhealthy and not going to live for long. And they named the baby Talitha Kumi in the story, knowing that this baby was going to die, but that on the other side of resurrection, you know, which that means, little girl, I say to you, arise. So to give your daughter that name, knowing you are going to die, but to give her the name that puts all your hope in the resurrection. So that one day you get to meet Talitha, and she's going to be made well in glory. And she's going into the arms of the Savior who raised this little girl, will raise that little girl. And that's one of the beautiful things about being people of faith, is when you come across the most devastating situations like that, you believe in a God of resurrection. Whether it happens on this side of the grave or on that side of the grave, we are a people that do not grieve as the world does. We are a people of hope. We believe in the resurrection. And oh, by the way, if you've been walking through years of suffering, you never give up hope that God could bring about a resurrection for you.
Yeah.
Someday he's going to meet you, whether it's on this side of the grave or on that side of the grave. Your ailment is going away. You will be raised to newness of life, and every miracle that you've ever been longing for, whether it's a spiritual one, an emotional one, a physical one, all of your ailments and all the ways that life has dealt you a hard hand, all of it will be made new. Death and mourning and crying and pain will be gone, because on that day he will make all things new.
Jeez.
Little girl, I say to you, rise. That's a comfort. All right, so we will close with that. Thank you for joining us on The Bible Show. Join us next week as we dive into Scripture again. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.